Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, dear listener. Welcome to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. I'm your host, Caroline Foran. If you are loving this series, and I hope that you are, do me a massive favor and hop on over to my Substack and click subscribe. Over there, I will be writing lots more in-depth content with a huge focus on anxiety, of course, as well as my parenting experience and some career stuff too. You can find me there at carolineforan.substack.com/subscribe. This week's episode, let me tell you, it's just so wonderful. Had I been able to listen to this story when I was in my teenage years or in my early 20s, I know it would have made a massive difference in helping me feel less alone and more confident about the challenges I was facing and that so many of us face. Matilda Eindhoff, you may know her on Instagram as Crazy Head Comics, is my wonderful guest. She shares her story of growing up with ADHD, bipolar, anxiety and depression, and after a string of traumatic experiences that nobody should ever have to endure, let alone endure within 1 year at the age of 17, she became ill with PTSD. It's hard to listen to at points for sure, but believe me when I say Matilda is so incredibly inspiring, so strong. She can teach us a lot about owning our challenges and becoming secure in our insecurities. And she is so wise, and she says herself now that she is just living her best life in spite of everything she's been through and in spite of everything that she still carries with her. She's channeled all of her struggles into the hugely popular Crazy Head Comics account, which you have to follow, and it has over 500,000 followers, and her new brilliant book, The Art of Feeling Better, which is out now. I hope you find this episode as helpful and encouraging as I did. Thanks for listening. It's such a pleasure to have you. You are one inspiring lady. First of all, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just so thrilled to have you. And congratulations on what looks to be such a beautiful book that is going to make such a huge difference for people. How does it feel to have your book out in the world?
It feels like unreal in a way, even though it's been out for a while now. It was such a long process of writing it and illustrating it. So once it was released into the wild and like people were actually seeing it and receiving it, it was really, really like nice and felt super rewarding, but a little scary, of course, too. But I had a really nice response. So I'm not as nervous anymore as I was on release day, you know?
Yeah, of course. No, it's a big deal. And you kind of have to protect yourself in that world when you put something out to the world and you're talking about things that are so personal and, you know, put you in a vulnerable position. You need to, I have felt that you need to kind of go into it with a mindset of like, you still need to take care of yourself the same way you always would. And, you know, maybe you're opening yourself up to even more people now. So it's a tricky balance when what you're sharing is you and your life.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. And I share some very like personal things about mental health too. Like it goes things you maybe wouldn't share with like a family member or a friend if you're not like super comfortable. So it's definitely some like really personal things.
And sometimes, I mean, I find it easier sometimes to share things with people that I don't know, like especially the internet, than I would maybe sitting down with my dad.
Oh, yeah, of course, like for sure. And I had the same thing when I started my Instagram. I was supposed to be anonymous, but then Instagram suggests accounts to you based on who you already follow. So then everybody found out about it at the end. But I was hoping that I could only have like strangers reading it at
oh,
first.
Oh, I get you. No way. Your story, for anyone who isn't familiar, you have experienced, you know, a huge amount of mental health challenges, anxiety, depression, bipolar, ADHD. That's a lot for one person. And your experience of all of these things have, I guess, one of your ways of coping was to draw and to illustrate and to start sharing your illustrations that kind of depict your experience, and people started to respond massively and feel seen and heard. And that's, I guess, the beginning of you becoming who you are today. But to go back to, I guess, to go back in time, like, which one of those issues or illnesses was the first to present itself? Like, was it, did you start, were you suffering with anxiety before you ever knew that you were bipolar or had ADHD? Like, just, I guess, just fill me in on the backstory.
So I was always really anxious as a child. And I just didn't think much of it because when you're younger, you think that everybody has the same experience in their head as you do.
Mm-hmm.
But it became clearer and clearer when I started, you know, you get to that age in like middle school or whatever, where you start comparing yourself to other people in like every type of way. And I was like, I don't think most other people are as anxious as me. And that there was something like maybe like pathological about my anxiety. That was like something more than just being nervous and like that regular anxiety. Oh, I've been like really anxious since I was like a young child. So I can't even like really remember when it started,
mm-hmm.
the anxiety.
So
yeah,
it was just
and then
that was always there for you.
Yeah, always, always, as long as I can remember. Yeah, and then of course, like my ADHD and I have dyscalculia too, which is the learning disability. That's kind of like dyslexia, but with numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that I had any like neurodivergency at all until like I was almost finishing. Swedish school is set up a little different than in UK or US, but I was finishing grundskolan, which is like you're 7 to like 15. And I wish I would have known then that I had ADHD and dyscalculia, but that came later. So it was really hard to grapple with that as a child, to not know that something was wrong and just thinking it was you who just wasn't trying enough or was not smart enough. Yeah.
And then, so at what age were you when you started to recognize signs of bipolar?
It was really young for me. And I went to a psychiatrist when I was like 13, 14, and we were talking about, because I was really like sad and seemed depressed, and my mom was worried about me, so she brought me to a psychiatrist, and we were talking about depression and stuff, and she was like, oh, you always sad, and I was like, yeah, I'm mostly sad, but you know, sometimes I can be happy, and I can be really, really happy, so it really goes like up and down a lot, and yeah, so that gave some warning bells in her head, and we talked more about it, and we did a bunch of assessments and stuff, and then I got sent to a bipolar and psychosis clinic, and I was there for several years, because you usually, when you're bipolar, your symptoms start when you're maybe like in your early to late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really early, so they really wanted to keep track of me to make sure that it was the right diagnosis and stuff. But so a couple of years after I got to that new unit, I got my bipolar type 2 diagnosis.
And what's type 2?
Type 2 means that you have hypomania. So it's kind of the lesser form. When you have type 1, you have mania, which has, it's more severe upstage. And then you have, you can have psychotic symptoms. So I don't naturally have psychosis, and my hypomania is a little less dangerous than a mania is. So it's just how to classify like the severity of the different types of bipolar disorder.
I understand. And I mean, to my mind, getting a diagnosis like that, or realizing you have ADHD or dyscalculia, is it?
Mm-hmm. Dyscalculia.
Dyscalculia.
Yeah.
They would be huge. Just, I guess, knowing that would make me very anxious as a young person to say, oh my God, I have to live with this. I have to deal with this. Was it Was that anxiety inducing for you, or was it almost like, okay, actually, this all makes sense now?
It was definitely a little bit of both, but at the beginning, with the bipolar disorder, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe that this is going to be my life. It felt like a death sentence, or like, because when you look at like the suicide rate of people with bipolar disorder is very high, and it's an incurable illness that you have to live with for the rest of your life, but it is luckily treatable, as I've learned. But in the beginning, I was very, very worried, and I got a whole team with doctors and nurses and stuff, and it was like really intense and a huge shift in like who I was in my life and who I saw myself. But the ADHD and the dyscalculia was much more like, oh, thank God I know now that it's not me who's the problem, you know?
And were you were made to feel like you were the problem, I guess. Was it teachers? Was it just by comparing yourself to other people, you thought it was like just that you weren't trying hard enough?
Yeah, it was adults who had a hard time with my feelings. And I was always very sensitive. And that was like kind of the label that was put on me from a really young age, like, oh, Matilda's so sensitive. She needs thicker skin. And like, I think people didn't know what to do with me when I had my emotions. And now I know that ADHD, just you struggle with like your emotional regulation. But back then, I think a lot of people, because they didn't see me as having ADHD, that they just thought that I was like really sensitive and it made other people uncomfortable. And then in school, with the like ADHD and stuff, like I had some things that I was really, really good at and some things that I was really, really bad at. So since the teachers saw me being good at things, they thought that the things I was bad at, I just wasn't trying hard enough. So with maths, and it was really hard because I just like dyscalculia goes super deep, and it's I mix numbers up. I can't remember numbers. I don't really know left and right. Like I have troubles with like time perception and like reading an analog clock. Yeah, it's like there's so much that goes into it. So for me, it was like impossible to sit in a math class, and like a lot of people who have dyscalculia can also talk about the math anxiety that you get from having to be exposed to something that you don't understand, that you're, and it has such an attachment to like being smart when you think about being good at maths.
Yeah.
So that was really unlocking my self-esteem when I was like, I'm not good at these things, and everybody thinks I'm not trying hard enough, and that I'm just too sensitive, and so there must be like something wrong with me.
And I mean, I think from the conversations I've had, a lot of people who have ADHD seem to also experience a lot of anxiety. They seem to kind of go hand in hand. How do you define or describe ADHD? You mentioned there about dysregulation, and I suppose the maybe misconception of ADHD is just someone who is hyper or can't focus.
Yeah, and that's my sister had has ADHD, but she was diagnosed when she was much younger because she has more of the boyish ADHD that you think of, like the stereotypical, you can't sit still, you're always like up and go, and that was more her experience. So when my therapist was like, oh, I think you have ADHD, I was like, no way I don't, because I'm so different from my sister. And I don't have those problems that she has. Like she is always stressing everywhere. Like she's always late. And I'm always like super early. And I'm like the oldest sister. So I think I'm like have that like good girl thing really drilled into me in a way. But for me, my ADHD is more attentive. So I have a really hard time starting things. I get like task paralysis before I do things. So if I'm starting something or like transitioning from doing one thing to another, it can take so long and be like the feeling of like if someone asks you to put your hand on a hot stove and you're like, I'm not gonna do that because I can't. If you ask me that, like I can't physically do that because I know what's gonna happen, like my body won't let me. That is kind of the same thing about like starting to do something. Unless you are really, really interested in it, it's just like really hard to do. And then for me, it's also really hard when I'm talking to other people to like listen. And I think what happens in my brain is that if someone says something and it inspires a thought in me, then my brain will go into thinking about my own things. And then I'll just see their mouth moving up and down as they're talking. But like, I haven't registered anything that they've said because it's
Yeah.
so easy for me to like just get lost in my own head.
I mean, you talk about the task paralysis there. Was that an issue for you when you were presented with the opportunity to write this book, to put this book together, or was that easier because, like you say, you were so interested in what you were doing?
Oh yeah, this is the easiest job I've ever had. So I was just writing and writing and drawing, and there was other things were hard about the book, like I think also another thing with ADHD, like rejection sensitivity. I think we have a hard time with critique and stuff, so it was really nerve-wracking when I was writing my book to have other people read it and like correct and change and offer suggestions and stuff. Like I think that was hard, but I got their job is to give like critique, so they are really good at doing it in a way that isn't like upsetting to me. But it is that was more the hard part of just having people read it and have like opinions about it. But actually doing it was amazing because psychology has been like a hyper fixation for me for a long time.
And I suppose, so your interest in psychology then, that's just sort of self-taught to help you cope better with everything you've been dealing with, is it?
Yes, and I don't think it was to cope at first. I think it was more like because some people are more interested in like things and they want to talk about like things that have happened. And like if you're talking about an event with them, like they want to talk about the facts of the event. Whereas for me, I'm super interested in like people and the inner workings of other people's minds. And I think psychology just goes hand in hand with that. So I was always like really interested in just knowing things about people and like really like getting to know people deeply and knowing like their deepest, darkest thoughts and stuff. So that's always been like really something I've enjoyed.
Yeah, and then I mean it could only have helped you massively to then learn and understand more about what you were experiencing and then be able to translate that into something that can help other people, because I think particularly the style of what you do lends itself so well to mental health, because when you're overwhelmed, I mean, and I don't think I have ADHD and I don't have bipolar. Anxiety has been what I've suffered with, but if you find yourself overwhelmed, sometimes reading something really heavy can just overwhelm you more. So seeing a visual interpretation of what you're going through can just make meaning so much quicker. It's really powerful. Has that always been a source of comfort for you to be able to articulate what you're feeling through art?
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, thank you so much for the nice words. It really means a lot. Yeah,
Sorry.
but art has always been, because I've been like an artist since I was a baby, and art has always been the thing that I come back to, like the hobby that lasts a lifetime. Maybe my first love is art. I don't know. But I've always been processing by writing and drawing and painting and stuff. And I don't think at first, I even realized that I was processing when I was doing it, or that something was happening in my subconscious that was making me feel better. But definitely, when I sit down with a paper and a pen and I draw something or I write something, everything else will make so much more sense afterwards. And sometimes I don't even know what I'm feeling until I've had a way to express it through art in some way. So that has always been something that I've been doing too. Help me like cope.
And it's quite a solitary activity to sit down with your, whether it's colors or crayons or whether you're doing digitally, like you're on your own doing it, you're allowing yourself, your mind to wander. Then you go and you share that on social media and suddenly it takes off. And now you have what, like 500,000 people following you?
Yeah.
So it goes from being solitary to being something that has a massive audience. And like, there's, if you took away all those other issues that you have been dealing with and learning to manage, just having that many people at the other end of what you do is a huge source of anxiety. How did it feel to start to share things at such a large audience and it no longer be just for you?
Yeah, it's so weird. And like now that you're seeing it, it makes my mind go like thinking, because it's interesting because I've always, my favorite activities and stuff have been solitary things to do, but I hate being alone. Like it's so weird. But yeah, because I wasn't expecting anything when I started my account. I was just hoping like maybe I'll make a friend or like I will just vent a bit and feel better afterwards. So when it started, like people started, more and more people started following, and it was kind of like blowing up a little bit, especially there, like a couple of years ago. It was like a lot of engagement with other people. It was really scary. And for me, who has such a hard time conceptualizing like numbers of people, just seeing that number and
Yeah.
thinking like those are actual real people, it's like horrifying. It's so scary to think about because it's so hard to conceptualize. And I'm really scared. Like, this subject of mental health is so sensitive, and everybody has such unique experiences regarding it, even though at the same time, I think you can always find someone who can relate to you, whatever you're going through. But yeah, it's, you can really step on some toes, and sometimes feels like you kind of have to walk on eggshells. And I think the climate that, like, of mental health and communication have really changed the last couple of years too. And I, for me, it was always very important to kind of be a little jokey sometimes and keep it light. And like, I have not a super dark sense of humor, but like, I can like engage in like an edgier joke or whatever. And so that's, if someone's not like ready to laugh or feel like not in a good place, and this is something that's kind of to them like making fun of something, it can step on some toes or whatever. So I
Yeah.
never want someone to come to my page and feel like they are not having like a place for them. So it's really hard because everybody is so different, everybody's needs are so different, that is, as a content creator, it's hard to know like how to please everybody. And at the end of the day, you can't.
You
But
can't.
as long as I like feel proud and like feel like I am like using my responsibility, as, because it is a lot of responsibility too, and I do a lot of research because I am not a real doctor, and a lot of what I do is based on my lived experience, and then some other is just my interest in psychology, and I do a lot of research and try to really not say anything that's not right information. So it's a lot of work, but it's like the best job I've ever had, so it's
It's
good.
amazing to find something that just suits you so well that it doesn't aggravate what you're dealing with. It actually suit it like to be able to make your work part of what keeps you well and feeling good is such an incredible place to get to. So you should be super proud of yourself for that, for finding that.
Yeah, thank you. And so many people don't get that privilege, which is so sad, because, and I didn't think I could do this before. And then I decided I needed to start doing that. But also, I had like a really supportive family who were always telling me that it was okay if I wanted to like be an artist, which I know not everybody's parents want their child to be an artist. And not everybody has that opportunity and stuff. But yeah, I'm making it work.
I want to hone in on anxiety in particular, as that's kind of the focus for this series. You mentioned it kind of always being there as a feature of your life. How does anxiety look for you? How does it feel? How does it manifest for you? And what has been your biggest learning about anxiety?
As I've grown and changed, my anxiety has too. And I have had a really like long journey with my anxiety, and it has changed a lot, and I've had a lot of different anxiety diagnoses. Like, I have generalized anxiety disorder, and I think, I'm hoping that's not for life, but I'm suspecting that it might be, because it feels like it's always been there. And that my body just reacts to things really strong. And I think, because anxiety is the warning signal that something is wrong or that there's danger, and I think mine is just a little off, like a little hypersensitive, just biology wise. But I used to have social anxiety. I had panic disorder for a couple of years, so I had a lot of different anxiety diagnoses at the same time, and that was like the worst ever. And life felt so small, because when you're avoiding things that make you anxious all the time, there's nowhere you can go at the end of it, because then everything makes you anxious, and like, you've avoiding so many things that everything just feels scary all the time. So I definitely had a time where I was just consumed by anxiety, and all I couldn't even tell where I started and the anxiety stopped, because it was just morphed.
I know
Yeah, but
exactly what that feels like. That was kind of that intensity was was my experience when I was in my mid-20s that kind of brought me to do this. And that fear is, it's something else. It's really, it can bring like a layer of depression in on top of the anxiety of this feeling of like hopelessness of like, oh my God, like, am I always going to be this way? Like, I don't want to live this way. This is so, like you say, you don't know where you end and anxiety begins.
Yeah, and it can go so like deep with like your physical symptoms in your body. Like, I used to have all these pains and aches in my joints and muscles, and I'd be like, where's this coming from? And I would wake up and my neck would be stiff and my whole face would hurt, and I would be like, what's happening to me? And like, so many problems with my body that were all anxiety at the end of the day, which was so weird that it can really like sit in your body
and
like that.
Oh no, it's such a physical thing. Has it changed for you then these days, like the age you are now? Does it look a little bit different?
Oh yeah, it looks a lot different because I did a bunch of cognitive behavioral therapy and got rid of my social anxiety and my panic disorder. So I can't actually say the last time I had a panic attack. And if I do have a panic attack, it's not as severe as it used to be, where like my feet and face and hands would like go numb and I would like, my vision would be blurred and like I felt like I was having a heart attack or I was dying or I was losing my mind. Like, now I can understand that something is anxiety, and that like me and breathing exercises are best friends. And I think that's what changed a lot for me. And when I got over my own stubbornness of like looking, not being like being afraid to look stupid, and actually started like implementing breathing exercises, it helped so much with my anxiety. Yeah. And my social anxiety is like gone completely. And I used to think I was an introvert because I was so socially anxious. And then when I stopped being socially anxious, I realized that I am a huge extrovert and I love like going up and talking to people who are strangers. And like, I don't have any problem with small talk or meeting new people or
That's so
anything
interesting.
Like yeah.
What made the difference for you with social anxiety? Because people, I mean, I don't know anyone who doesn't experience it to some extent. What changed in your mind that made that not scary?
I guess just because when I was never shy, even when I was little, because I liked being by myself and I had like, I could play by myself and that was fine. And I was never shy and I liked talking to people. But then when I started high school and I started a new school, it was just, I think the change and the transformation was so big to me that it developed my social anxiety. And it was really like sad, and it felt super like I was the only person in the world because I was too scared to like talk to other people. But I think people, like, I am the person who's like people always come up and talk to me and like people are drawn to me, and it's been that way my entire life. Like, I have so many stories about like all these different types of people who come up and like tell me crazy things and like just trust me in like a weird way. And so I just started leaning into that and being like, I think I'm a people person. And once you start talking to people, you realize kind of how easy it is. And so now I just love like going up and talking to people and just see what's happening. And I think like I got a dog and I was used to walk my dog, and he like goes up to other dogs and says hi. And it's so natural for them to do that. And I think it's so weird that like we stand with our dogs and our dogs are like talking to each other and like saying hi, and we're like so scared of each other. Like, something, there's something so weird about that. And the more I think about it, like when I'm outside walking, like it's weird to not say hi when you like go past someone, because we're like all people and stuff. And I think especially in Sweden, like our culture is we're scared of strangers. We are super introverted. We hate talking to strangers. We just want to like go home and like be alone. But that's like not fun. And I think we, especially in Sweden, like we need to shift that culture to like talk to other people, because there's so much you can learn and like you can brighten people's day. And like, I think people are always happy once you start talking to them. Yeah. So I think it's just like it's kind of like power in a way to be able to just talk to people. And there was something that I really missed when I didn't have it.
Well done again for being able to just own that and make that work for you. Like, you've come such a long way then to be able, and you did all that, you know, on your own back to be able to like understand that and realize, actually, look, I actually am an extrovert. Like that's the kind of life work that people never get around to. So again, you should be super proud, and it's really, really inspiring to hear. You mentioned there about the biology of like anxiety and depression, and just, you know, maybe your alarm system in your body is just designed to be a little bit more hyper or overly concerned than it needs to be. And I've always described my anxiety as like an overbearing parent that's just kind of working too
oh,
hard
yeah.
to protect you. And really, you know, you are actually safe, and it's okay. You can relax now. But because you mentioned the biology of it, I'm just curious, do you kind of rationalize your experience of these things as biological, something that is just your wiring, it's your makeup, it's the way you were made? Or do you feel like there was life experiences, like nature or nurture? Like, was there something growing up that, I mean, I know for me, there was certainly experiences that helped or not helped, led me to become a more anxious person.
Yeah, definitely. And I think biology, once you really think about it, because some people have clinical depression or like clinical anxiety where it can be amazing in your life and you are still anxious and you can't control it. But I do think that most people's mental health problems are situational and are dependent on the world we live in, and just how fast-paced and how much pressure it is in all sorts of ways to just be like, prove yourself and work hard or this and that. But oh my God, I forgot the question.
It was just whether is it important to you, or is it necessary to you to go back and understand if there is a root in your life to the anxiety?
Yeah. No, but I think something that I've thought a lot about as I've gotten older and like with my neurodivergency is that it was traumatic growing up being neurodivergent and like not knowing it, first of all, and just like just being neurodivergent in this world, who like in a world that is so like harsh and fast and not kind to people who are different. So I think that I was like labeled as different from when I was very young, and that made me anxious because I felt like people were always perceiving me and judging me. And I think that had a lot to do like with my social anxiety later on too, that like the feeling of other people like not understanding and like the fear of being misunderstood really played a huge factor into my anxiety, I think.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So anxiety and depression, they often are experienced by people together or one after the other. Just to give you my background, when I was really anxious, I was diagnosed as depressed, and I wasn't someone who suffered with depression, but because my anxiety was so bad, I became depressed as a result of it. So as someone who experiences, bouts of anxiety and depression, how do they differ for you, and what is it like to experience both? Because they're quite different.
Yeah, they are super different. Depression to me is a lack of motivation, and a lack of meaning and hope, I think, and just feeling like I don't want to do anything and I don't even care. And even if I know something's going to make me feel better, it's kind of like, what's the point of feeling better? Everything just becomes meaningless. It's like the world is in black and white. And just feeling like you're tired, you just want to sleep, you feel sad. Whereas anxiety is more like a charge of energy, but like a bad type of energy that makes you think that something is wrong and that you're in danger. And like the feeling of impending doom comes to mind with anxiety. And I think just there's so much going on in your brain, whereas I feel like when you're depressed, it's like kind of still and kind of gooey in there. But when you're anxious, it's like your mind is going a million miles a second, being like, oh my God, is this going to happen? Is that going to happen? What's going to happen? Nothing's going to work out. There's a barrage of thoughts that are just scary.
You've described it so perfectly there. The idea of your brain being like gooey is such a powerful visual. And for you, would you experience more anxiety or more depression?
More anxiety. I think I used to have a time where it was more depression, and it's funny to talk about depression when you have bipolar depression, because it's so different from the people I know. Like, all my friends have had depression, and most people I know have probably had like depression at some point. But it's different when you're bipolar, because then you kind of know that the episodes are coming and going. Or at least for me, like, I can at least take comfort in the fact that, like, okay, I know this is like a episode or like a period that's gonna come and go. But my anxiety is like, that thing is there with me through it all.
Yeah, that's something. I guess the bipolar, almost, though it sounds like those episodes are just happen to you, whereas the anxiety is there all the time. You can learn to manage that as best you can, and it sounds like you're doing an incredible job of doing that.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm trying.
If
But it
you
is
feel,
hard.
yeah, no, it's really hard and it's constant work. If you feel comfortable, can you tell me about maybe the lowest point that you reached?
Oh my God, I was 17 and I had the worst year of my life. It was awful. It was absolutely awful. And I think because I had PTSD, I don't think I have anymore. I haven't been like, it's been a while since I went to therapist, but I don't think I have it anymore, because I don't have nearly as many symptoms, and I can have like triggers sometimes. But I think most days I am just like living my best life and not too worried about it. But when I was 17, I just had the worst luck ever, and I went through a bunch of traumatic things. So I was sexually assaulted when I was 17, for my first time, just sexual assault. And then a couple of months after that, I went to America and I saw a man die in a really like graphic and brutal car accident, and I saw the aftermath of that. And I've never really like thought about death in that way, or like seen someone die, and that was like super duper scary. And then I was prescribed a depressive medication, and that triggered like a medically induced psychosis. So then I went psychotic and I tried to take my own life, because I was like, I didn't even, and it wasn't even like I was actually like suicidal. It was more like I was so psychotic that I didn't know like what I was doing. So it was like wham, 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 wham. Like, all these things happened at the same time. And it was like, so that was definitely like the worst part of my life. And it almost is hard to talk about now in a way, because like it's been so long that
Yeah.
it's so far behind, because now I'm 25. So yeah, so now it's like I can't almost like not even conceptualize it being me who was
I
there,
know,
you know?
I
So it
know.
was so long ago now, but I remember when it happened, like it was really, really hard. But I've come such a long way now that it's like, it's not something that I feel like an emotional charge whenever
Yeah.
I like talk about anymore, which is really like cool how the mind works and how you can like
More
forget
distance, yes.
pain, you know?
That is
Crazy.
just more than anyone should ever have to be subjected to in their lifetime, let alone have it all happen in the space of a year or happen at all. It's really horrific, and I'm astounded listening to you at your very apparent resilience. And you might not always have felt that you've been a resilient person, but oh my God, you really are. You mentioned PTSD there. I think that's a phrase that gets thrown around a lot. You know, oh, I have PTSD because of this bad thing, like bad day that I had in work or whatever. How do you, what is PTSD really like, and what are the symptoms of PTSD in your experience? And how did you, do you think it was just a case of like just more time and distance away from those traumatic events that helped it, I guess, dissolve a little bit in your mind?
So, because I also was like, oh, I didn't even think about the fact that it was PTSD, and I didn't have any like indications of it being that, according to me. And when I finally opened up to a therapist, I think it was years later, because I was, and especially like the sexual assault thing is like, that was something that I never thought that I would ever like tell to anyone ever. And when I told my therapist, we started talking about it, and then we started, you know, talking about trauma, and then sometimes they sneakily start doing the assessments on you. So I think she like sneakily started doing an assessment, and I didn't even think I didn't even know I had PTSD, but then I read my they write little journals about you, the doctor, like the doctor's notes, and you can read those like in Sweden, you can ask to get them. And I was reading through mine, and it just said I had PTSD, and I was like, oh my God, like what? But it's clear that I did have, but I just didn't think it was like severe enough to have PTSD, because I always equated PTSD to being something like really, really, really traumatic that would happen like to you where your life was in danger.
But I mean,
But
I guess everyone's idea of traumatic obviously differs, but what you described sounds pretty unbearable.
yeah, and it was so weird that it was like you can minimize something in your own head so much that you're thinking like if you can compare traumas too. It's like, but I wasn't in a car accident. It was someone else, and I just like looked and like, how is that gonna do this to me? Or like, why am I so scared now? But then also every time I'm in a car, I think I'm gonna die, you know? And my hands and feet are going numb, and I like my pulse is like starting going, and I'm like, I'm never gonna get my driver's license. I never wanna be in a car again. So it's really like the and like small traumas are traumas too. And I think when I like realized that I had PTSD, I really started looking into my like childhood and my life, and I found like this bunch of like small and little traumas that I had like forgotten about or didn't think it was like that serious. But looking at it through like an adult's eyes, you realize that like, yeah, that was like probably really traumatic for you.
And did that help? I mean, to go back in time and to be able to contextualize or conceptualize, like, I suppose I've often been told with anxiety, you know, going back and saying, oh, well, like, this is the reason why it's happened can only get you so far because you're here, you're where you are right now. But do you think it almost gave you, did it help you be kinder to yourself a little bit to know, actually, maybe this is a lot for a human to go through?
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think a lot of people kind of like make it a meme of the like, oh, you go to therapy and all they ask about is your childhood. And like, oh, why are they talking about my childhood? That was so long ago. I want to talk about what's happening now. But yeah, like the things that happen to you in childhood really do shape you in such a way, and like all throughout your teens and like before your brain is fully cooked or whatever, like those things
Fully cooked. I love that.
really those things really like leave wounds and make you the type of person you are today. So if you want to like feel better now, you kind of have to like make peace or process the things that you haven't processed from before.
I agree. You mentioned earlier that you're living your best life now, and that's so wonderful to hear. What do you do to take care of yourself now? I mean, with all those individual things that you've got to manage, it's a lot for one person. What does self-care look like for you? What, just give me an idea of the things that have made you get to this point of being able to say, I'm living my best life.
I think like what happened to me is that I was like, I can't do anything anymore. I just have to heal. And I just dedicated my whole life to like, how can I heal? And like, in what ways can I heal? And I think the first step is like, what do you need? Like, I had to get to know myself, and not in the way that like you get to, like, it sounds weird, but like you actually like really like process and think about things and like go back in your life. And you, I journaled a bunch, and I was just like opening up all these little wounds that I found when I was digging into myself. And I was really thinking about ways that I could like change my life for me and what I need, and not what other people might tell me that I need, or like what I think I should need, or what I should want. And really like trying to remove yourself from all the like external voices of like what you're supposed to want and need, and just really focus on like yourself and like what you actually are, like what works for you. And I think you can really get creative with self-care. And of course, self-care is like, so many boring things goes into self-care, like budgeting, or like, you know, like washing your feet, or like whatever, like just boring everyday things. And like those things, and like the classic, you know, eat, sleep, move, which I have actually gotten like more interested in, like food and like eating foods are like good for your body. And like, I'm trying to like heal my gut and like doing all that stuff, and like eating all this like seeds and nuts and fruits and stuff. And actually having like an interest in like nutrition, like in eating to have more like serotonin and stuff, has been really cool. So that's my new little hyperfixation. And for me with bipolar disorder, like my sleep is so important. And now that I've been able to work from home and be my own boss, I can have whatever weird sleep schedule I want and like get enough sleep, which has made a huge difference for me. And I think I've really started prioritizing fun and just trying to have as much fun as I can. Even though sometimes it might feel silly to be like, because you're an adult and you have like responsibilities and stuff, but I love fun and I love creative play, and I think you have to schedule something to look forward to have like upcoming. And really try to find ways to minimize stress, because stress is so detrimental to your health. So finding ways to stress less and say no to things that I don't want to do, and actually doing things to prevent stress, has been really helpful for me.
Something that was made a big difference for me was I think we live in a society that constantly tells us to like smash through our limitations and like just stop thinking we have any limitations. But actually, I do have limitations, and having respect for those limitations keeps me well, you know? So I think that you could make it become something you can. It can sound negative, but actually it's working with yourself instead of against yourself. And if you're working against yourself, trying to live as if you're not someone who experiences these things, or not let it hold you back, then you're kind of resisting what is. So you kind of sometimes have to go with the flow of it. So I'm just wondering, what limitations are you mindful of that actually help you? I mean, just being aware of them and being like, okay, like you said about the sleep, like I know if I don't do that, like I won't feel good. Like, what limitations guide you in a positive way?
I guess I'm just not like the most motivated person naturally. And I used to think that I had to have these like big goals in life that I had to do and like work towards something all the time. But then I feel like once I did work towards something and then I had it, I couldn't even enjoy it when I had it, because then I was just already thinking about the next thing I need to do to like enjoy things. And I was thinking, how can I be like a good worker and this and that? And like, honestly, like I don't care about being like a good worker or like having accomplishments or like doing things. Like that's not what interests me in life. Like what interests me in life is like I want to eat something good for dinner, and I want to see my friends as often as I can, and I want to stress as little as possible, and I want to like be in the sun as much as I can and just enjoy those like natural moments of life and like human connection with other people. And like I'm not focused so much on all that other things anymore.
Wow. I mean, that's such an incredible realization to have at such a young age. I mean, especially in your 20s, when the messaging coming at you is to just be so goal driven and goal focused. And if you can swap that out for being motivated by the kind of life you want to have and the kind of days that you want to have, then you are, you know, you've kind of figured it out. And I really fully believe that your vulnerability, you know, and my vulnerability and anyone's vulnerability, like having, if you were just to write a list of all the things that you've had to face and how utterly terrifying it all would have seemed, and how much you would have thought that that would impede you or hold you back or mean you can't, you know, get to where you are now or enjoy life. But because you've really harnessed it, and like you say, like you've smashed through the social anxiety, because you're like, I want to go and talk to humans. Like, why are we here if not to connect with other humans? You know, you are testament to the fact that your vulnerability can be your superpower. And like, that's my, always my main kind of message. So just congratulations on, you know, obviously the book is amazing. It's such an incredible accomplishment, The Art of Feeling Better, but also beyond that very measurable success, that outward success. I think it's the internal work that you've done that is, so the most inspiring and like really will make a difference to other people. Like, you're already making such a huge difference to hundreds of thousands of people. And thank you for being so willing to be vulnerable and open and normalizing it. And there's just going to be so many young teenage girls listening or coming up following you who are like, you're giving them permission to be, whether it's neurodivergent or just to be however they are. And that's honestly such a beautiful thing.
Thank you so much. What kind words. I really, really appreciate it. And it warms my heart. Mm-hmm. And it was so fun to come on here today and talk a little bit about anxiety and things like that. And you're a wonderful interviewer.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Before I let you go, I was looking at some of your illustrations, but I think there was some around the subject of dating with mental illness. And I do get asked this a lot. And I have been married for almost 5 years, so I'm kind of out of the game of dating. I'm 35 now, so I'm a little bit beyond you. But would you have any advice for someone, like how, when and how to communicate if you're dating someone or you're starting to date someone that maybe you're someone who has bipolar, or maybe you're someone who has, you know, chronic panic attacks or suffers from depression?
I think that it's important to always be honest, and then also at the same time, I think especially as like young women or femme presenting people, like you gotta care about your safety a lot when you're meeting new people, unfortunately. But so I don't think anybody should share something with someone like the first date if that's not comfortable, if you don't get a good vibe. But I think it is important to talk about your mental health with people, and I think that also allows them to open up with you and to have just like a good conversation. And I think if they don't like it, because a lot of people might not want to date someone who has like a mental illness, and then that is your like repellent for people you don't want to date, to just say that right out of the gate. And then it can weed out the people who aren't gonna be supportive to you if they don't vibe with that. But I think most of the time, people will share their own experiences with you too. And I didn't think that I would find someone, because I was like, no, nobody can deal with all of me. But I've been with my boyfriend now for like 7 years.
Wow. Oh, that's so lovely.
We're high school sweethearts.
Oh my God, that is so sweet. Oh my God. Well, that is such excellent advice. Thank you so much. You sound like you're so much wiser beyond your years.
Thank you. It's all the therapy I've been in.
Yeah. Best of luck with whatever is next. And The Art of Feeling Better is out now. And I'll pop a link into the episode, the show notes, and a link to your Instagram page, which is just such a wonderful resource. Thank you for everything, Matilda, and have a wonderful day, and I hope you've enjoyed our chat.
Thank you so much, Caroline.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.